Welcome to Rockology. I don't know. We don't have any intro music. That's best I can do on short notice. But I'm Russ Cohen, your host. We've got Michael Jello, my co-host. We want to just do this every once in a while, right, Mike? We'll talk 10, 15 minutes about some subjects that we feel need a little light shine on them.
Yeah, a little air. We'll take suggestions on our theme music. I think we can use anything that doesn't have lyrics. Like we could use like Fire on High by ELO, and you know what I'm saying, we could get away with it because there's no lyrics.
We'll look into it.
Yeah, so offer us as our suggestion, send it to me or Russ at our Twitter feeds, Mike and Buffalo or Sports.
If not, maybe I'll play the mouth harp that like they used to play on Charlie Brown.
Or we could play Hocus Pocus by Focus.
No, we don't want to lose the audience. All right. So let's talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They came out with this massive list like they always do, and they put it out and everybody gets mad, and we sometimes get mad, but we always discuss it. We discussed it on the Buzzcast. But now I've sort of said, all right, let's just come up with a top five drop dead list. Like you want these five in before anybody else,
right?
List or otherwise, they might be on the list. They might not be. And we're not in any particular order. Like we're not ranking them.
Let's not do what we did on the Buzzcast, because in the sense that like I slammed some of the, some of the nominees. And I'll just say this, like, I don't believe, not because it's not my music and because I'm an old white 50s guy, that hip hop artists belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they're going to let them in. I think they're letting them in for popular, you know, to keep in touch with popular culture. So they want to let Notorious B.I.G. and Jay-Z in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay, fine. But just don't ignore the people who clearly belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that they have, I think, screwed over the number of years. And the thing is, I've gotten to the point, Russ, where I really don't care anymore. I think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a joke. They're a bunch of political.
All right. But let's just talk about the list.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Okay, I was getting out of my rant.
This is Mike. Also had a rant about Hall & Oates. Not me. It was Mike. Just so you know.
Why?
Okay, you can deny it, Mike, but we know better.
What? Well, okay. But about Hall & Oates being a bad goal song? Yes.
Okay. All right. It is a bad goal song. All right. My first one that came to mind is ELP. Like,
yes,
very influential. Carl Palmer, one of the three, four best drummers ever.
Right.
Still out there working. Was great in Asia. So it's not like he was just in one band. Right. And I think he was in a band before ELP. I just can't remember the name.
Was it Nice?
Yeah, the Nice.
I think.
Yeah. And so I look at that band, and some of their stuff is pretty epic. WNEW used to open up with Fanfare for the Common Man, if you remember that. People from New York, they might remember that. So, and I think probably it was before like Richard Neer's show or somebody like that. He's still on FAN, but at any rate,
just correction. Carl Palmer's band before ELP was something called Atomic Rooster.
Ah, Atomic Rooster. So I bet you it was Greg Lake that was in the other
one. Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Anyhow, and even Greg Lake toured with Asia once for that Asia and Asia thing. And so, you know, again, very influential, sold a lot of records. They were a terrific live band. They really have everything you'd want. And we don't hear a peep out of it. Now, is it because, you know, members passed away? Keith Emerson passed away. Greg Lake passed away. Is it because of that?
Well, I mean, you would probably say that, and we are scarred by this because of our love of Yes, that it was a crime that Yes was put in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after Chris Squire died.
Yeah,
it's like the music equivalent of Pat Burns getting in the Hockey Hall of Fame after he passed away. It's like,
yeah, it bummed us out. There's no question about it.
I believe, and I think the evidence is there, is that there is a bias against progressive rock because, obviously, right now, if you look at who is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you would say probably it's four bands. It's
right.
Genesis, Yes, Rush, and Rush is progressive than maybe pop. and Pink Floyd, who Pink Floyd are, I don't know if you would
categorize it. They straddle it.
Right? It's art rock. It's techno in a way. It's you know, whatever. It's multi-jurisdictional. But see, the thing is, ELP was like a super group. Yes. You know, it was Keith Emerson was from the Nice.
Like he's the best ever. I love Rick Wakeman, but Emerson, you can't touch him.
Yeah, no, he's incredible. I mean, in terms of dexterity, in terms of just the range of he's playing classical stuff in a rock form, and it's right. incredible. If you see the video, there's a video out there on YouTube of him. I think it's at the Olympic Stadium in Montreal, and there's snow all over the place, and he's playing Fanfare for the Common. If you don't appreciate that, you're an idiot. So I mean, they're a fantastic band. The reason why I think they're not in yet is maybe the perceived pomposity of progressive music. Oh well, and not everybody can play it. Yeah, because they're great musicians.
Because it's actually hard to play.
Yeah, it's like I'm sorry. It's like, you know, it's great that if you can go out and play a guitar. And just go out and sing a song and have a hit. That's great. But like some of these people who were in progressive were classically trained, and I like simple straight 12 bar blues or just simple, you know, acoustic stuff or whatever. But I love complex music too, and there was nothing more complex and greater than ELP in the 70s.
Right. So okay. So were they in your list of five?
They were in my list of five, but I have a longer list. Okay. You only get five, Mike.
Yeah. Right. I'll make a longer list.
I'll limit myself to five. Yes. I have self control. I mentioned this one, and I think you were a little skeptical, but I'm going to stick with it because not only were they did they have a massive big hit album, which is always a key for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but the albums before were actually better and I think the more critically acclaimed, and that's Supertramp. Supertramp, okay, everybody says Breakfast in America. Okay, that was all over the radio to the point that you were sick of it. And I get it. They're, you know, my favorite bands have had multi-platinum albums that, like, I don't want to hear Invisible Touch. I love Genesis, but that album just makes me sick. But Supertramp's albums before Breakfast in America were the ones that were the great ones. Crime of the Century might be in the top 10 albums of the 1970s. Okay. Really, it's a fantastic album. Even in the Quietest Moments is a phenomenal album. Crisis, What Crisis is a phenomenal album. So you've got three, and believe me, they've let in bands like Guns N' Roses who had two great albums.
Yeah.
So a band that had four and one of them being a monstrous hit should be enough. And so, I mean, I think that I think they're a little bit progressive, but I think they're mostly drifted into sort of pop, adult contemporary stuff, but they're a great band, and I think they had a lot of influence. So I think Supertramp should be in.
And in 1994, Roger Hodgson actually got a writing credit for the song Walls on I think it's on the Talk album for Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. Like, that's a Trevor Rabin song. So, you know, there was a collaboration there too.
Yeah.
So it just shows that, yeah.
And Hodgson is in his, I think, late 60s or maybe even early 70s. And I've seen video of him singing, like, with orchestras, like doing Supertramp stuff like Fool's Overture in front of an orchestra. And the guy can hit the high notes like John Anderson in his elder age, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. Next one for me is Styx. I've seen many incarnations of them with Dennis DeYoung, without. Obviously, they've been without for a long time. Mm-hmm. I did see the last tour, Mr. Roboto tour, and while that was not a great album, it still was a great show. I saw it at City Center in New York. It was a ballet place, and they never had a concert there before. It was cool. So, nice little venue. But you could tell that was probably the end of them because Dennis DeYoung was wanting to sing show tunes. Tommy Shaw wanted to play more rock and roll. Like, no, I mean, that's just...
Right. Yeah.
It's no slight to Dennis. He's still got a great voice. I watch him all the time on YouTube. Like, he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. End of the day, this band still kicks ass. And there's really... I get that people make fun of them. You can make fun of Come Sail Away all you want. Mm-hmm. And it has been on, like, NBC has had shows just making fun of that song.
I think Scrubs ripped it.
Yeah, Scrubs ripped it. Wasn't it Paul Rudd that actually did a video singing? Paul Rudd did it. When you get that kind of heat one way or the other, you're deserving of being in the Hall of Fame because you have made an impact. And Renegade, like, they play it at every Steelers game.
Is it Penguins?
Steelers.
It's Steelers. Okay.
Yeah, that's their song. It's a big deal. I mean, again, and Renegade did get used on some CBS show, but Mike, you always watch The Equalizer. I don't even watch CBS, so like I
watch the old Equalizer from 1985, not the crap one that they're doing today. But anyway, no, I agree on your points with Styx. And again, Styx, they were big early on MTV, but they had already made it big. I mean,
yes,
if you look at like Crystal Ball. Too Much Time on My Hands. Yeah. My particular favorite is Sweet Madam Blue, which is one of the
great song.
Early hits. I mean, again, we had this argument with Ack that I consider Styx sort of American progressive.
They have a great CD. I have it. It's called like the Wooden Nickel Recordings, I think, and it's before they really hit big as Styx. It's really good stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, it wasn't one album. It was a series of albums. It was mid to late 70s through, I'd say, 81, 82. But they were monstrous. They were, you know, and they were, sure. they were not a stadium band, but an
arena. Oh, they filled band. MSG. I saw them at MSG a couple times.
And you know, they've lasted past that with after DeYoung left and after, you know, Tommy Shaw kept them going. I think they're more deserving than bands like the Lovin' Spoonful who are in the Rock and Roll Hall.
Yes,
for Christ's sake. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, not to slam the Lovin'
Spoonful. What was their song? Do You Believe in Magic?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah, there's okay. One. There's one.
But it's not even like a rocking song.
So Richard Harris belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because he did MacArthur Park, which is a great song. But geez.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, actually, Marco Rivera, who some people always find our show, even when we're just taping it for audio, but he does have something to add here and says a lot of Styx music in movies, and he has a good point there, too. So anyhow.
Probably because they can get it for
– Was Styx on your list, too?
Yeah, Styx was on my list, but like I said, I have an expansive list, so I'll be able to make
it. You're not going to – we only have like 5 minutes left.
I'm limiting myself to five, but I'm saying – I can expand from the five that I had to make five since you're stealing all my picks.
No, I got one that probably won't be stolen.
This one might have been on your list, but and it's tied to the first band that we discussed. There would not be progressive if it wasn't for King Crimson. Mm-hmm. Now, King Crimson is not like they didn't have multi-platinum albums, but we're talking about influencers. And there is no doubting the influence of King Crimson in terms of, you know, Robert Fripp, who's, you know, I mean,
he's weird. He's weird. Very deliberate, though, as a guitarist. And he has his own style that you know when you're listening to him.
Right. And his influence on future guitarists, I mean, it's undoubted. There are a lot of guitar players who say that Fripp was very influential. You know, this is a band that started with Greg Lake on vocals, with Michael Giles on drums, with Fripp on guitar. And, you know, their best album was their first album, but it wasn't their only album. And there were many incarnations. And that's probably why, you know, they haven't made the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because the stage wouldn't be able to hold the number of people that would come up.
Right. I mean, I saw the incarnation when Bruford went back in the 80s and John Wetton was the lead singer.
Right. They came back, I think, but that was the group from like in the mid 70s, the Starless and Bible Black and the Red was the big album with Wetton on bass and with Bill Bruford on drums, which is just,
phenomenal.
They're both phenomenal. I mean, John Wetton is mostly associated with Asia now, and Asia was a pop band, but I mean, he was a fantastic bass player with UK and with King Crimson. But King Crimson, I mean, in terms of just the in the Court of the Crimson King influenced, yes, Genesis, all these progressive bands.
Well, actually, when Yes toured with Asia, this is probably going back 7-8 years, they did play that at their show. Yeah. And it was great. It was, you know, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, I saw that. And I love the sort of DNA things that happen that we learn about in music. Genesis definitely was influenced by King Crimson to the point that Tony Banks and the band bought the Mellotron from King Crimson.
Right.
That was the Mellotron that was used on Nursery Crimes and Foxtrot and Selling England by the Pound. So, yeah, I mean, not just that, but I'm just saying the influence of the of their performances, of their musicianship. I mean, the documentary that we've seen, the BBC documentary on progressive rock, when Bill Bruford, when he was a member of Yes, said, and I quote, "They scared us to death. This was the best band in the world," you know, and the stuff that they did on some of the songs on King, on the first and In the Court of the Crimson King were highly influential. So I think King Crimson deserved to be in.
All right. So I only have three left and we have to go at a little quicker pace. This one will be quick. Iron Maiden deserves it. Good buddy of mine, Shane Malloy, is a massive fan. And I, 4 or 5 years ago, I got a chance to review their show, go and cover it, and it was really good. Bruce Dickinson's a legend, obviously.
Yes.
You know, they had Eddie, who is like, you know, the skeleton that comes out in all kinds of different incarnations, and that's funny, but they're really a good band. The guitar playing's great. Mm-hmm. They're one of those bands that play, you know, multiple guitars, and it sounds like one. They're that tight, and they're good. Are they something I listen to all the time? No, but I do have a live album on my iPod. So I would put them in because they have a massive audience that doesn't get talked about a lot. And even when I was in high school, this is going back, I remember seeing an Iron Maiden painted denim jacket. Like, that's probably when they first were getting popular.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stick with that genre because I agree with Iron Maiden. I mean, I don't listen to Iron Maiden albums every day, but I respect them in terms of their longevity and their quality of music. I have a friend who is a big metal fan and a big Maiden fan, travels a lot for his work, and apparently one time flying back from Europe was on the plane with Iron Maiden, sat next to them, and you know, it was like one of the best moments of his life that he got to talk to Bruce Dickinson. So I'll go with Judas Priest. Okay, heavy metal is highly unrepresented or not represented enough in terms of its popularity and in terms of the bands that are in there.
True.
And Judas Priest, I mean, you couldn't get any bigger than them in the late 70s, early 80s, the MTV era. You got Another Thing Coming, Heading Out to the Highway.
After Midnight.
You know.
Although the irony is, I covered a show of theirs and they played After Midnight before Midnight because they're getting a little older now, Mike. I mean, it's, you
know. Right. Hot Rockin'. I mean, some of the songs. I mean, people who are not into metal know those songs because of MTV. So, yeah, I mean, I think they deserve to get in.
No, I agree. Foo Fighters definitely deserve to get in.
Agreed.
The first time, and this is, I knew of them, obviously. They have big hits. You know, Hero gets played everywhere. But I saw them on the tour when Dave Grohl broke his leg. And he actually was playing the tour with a broken leg.
Yeah,
he was sitting on the throne. And it was unbelievable. I couldn't imagine a guy playing 2 hours every night with a broken leg.
He played the show that he broke the leg.
I know.
A doctor in the crowd was holding his leg in place as he's playing.
It's unbelievable. I mean, yeah. The guy is just complete rock star. And when Chris Squire passed, they did play a Yes song. I don't remember which song, but I remember seeing it. And that was great. I put him in. They don't need any big introduction from us.
Interesting note that Foo Fighters was interviewed on Howard Stern last week, and apparently, like they asked, who would you want to induct you into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And he said, Stuart Copeland, because Stuart Copeland did an album called Clark Kent, which I never heard about. And he didn't advertise that his name was on it. It was just called Clark Kent. They got Grohl got this album when he was in Nirvana or before he's in Nirvana, and it really influenced him. Then he found out it was Stuart Copeland, and then that influenced him to name his band Foo Fighters instead of naming it a Dave Grohl thing, because right. he didn't want the attention after Kurt Cobain killed himself.
Right.
As a here's another Nirvana, so he called them Foo Fighters, and that was influential. And now because of that, he wants Copeland.
I like it.
Yeah. Now, you know, who knows if that'll end up happening? I guess they're on good terms with Copeland, so it's very possible. But yeah, I mean, they're a fantastic band, and I saw them that tour, and they're fans. They're just great. So, okay, so I think we both have four.
Yep. You have four. I got one more.
Yeah, this is my fourth, and I'm going to go the direction of solo artists who. And I'm doing this because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame have done this. They Peter Gabriel has been nominated, has been inducted separate from Genesis. Clapton has been inducted separate from Cream and from the Yardbirds. All the Beatles are inducted separate.
By the way, big ups to Peter Gabriel doing Biko again at the age of 70. Yes. And still sounding really good.
He's still great. But my point is that there are
actually 71. Sorry, I reached his number.
There are solo artists who I think exceeded the popularity, or at least matched the popularity of their bands, that I think deserve to be in, because they've set the precedent. They're doing it with Tina Turner. You know, is Ike and Tina Turner in there, and now they're doing her separately and her solo career in terms of sales. In terms of influence, is probably greater than what you did with Ike and Tina Turner. I'll say Sting, because The Police are unbelievable. One of my favorite bands.
No doubt.
Sting's solo career, Dream of the Blue Turtles, Soul Cages, Ten Sumner's Tales. You know, okay, then it tails off and he got into a lot.
Well, it tails off because he did become a bit of a lounge singer for a while.
Right. But he comes back to
it. He does.
And he's still capable of doing it. I mean, anybody who watches, you go on YouTube and you find he did a 60th birthday party. That was years ago in New York, and he had a bunch of guest musicians come up, and it was like Stevie Wonder and Lady Gaga, and Robert Downey Jr. came out and sang a song. It's great band. He's fantastic. He still can sing. He still can play the bass better than most people. His solo career is incredible. So I think he deserves to be in as a solo artist.
Actually, look it up. Robert Downey did All Good People. He sang that. You could go find the YouTube. It's actually pretty good.
He has a pretty good voice, and you think, you know, it's like he's not just Iron Man.
It was surprisingly good. Michael is asking, is Steven Tyler separate than Aerosmith? His lips are, but he's not.
No. He's had solo projects.
Yeah, nothing like
that. Not to the point that he's going to get in by himself. No.
Okay, so the last one for me is the Go-Go's. Very influential. Belinda Carlisle, Jay Whelan especially, they did so many other projects. Jay Whelan was in a lot of other projects. She's a really good guitarist, good songwriter. She did a song called Cool Jerk. I can't remember who that was a compilation with, the artist name. But anyhow, did a lot of other stuff, had just made a comeback. The documentary is great. It would be a good time to put them in because they influenced a lot of female rockers out there, and
a documentary produced by Bob McCowan, if you can't believe it.
And
I watched it. It was on Showtime. It was fantastic.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean the fact that they toured with the Police. I think it was on the Synchronicity tour, and then they ended up having the number one album in the world.
I saw the Synchronicity tour, but I must have seen the second half of it. At Shea Stadium, and it was Joan Jett, REM, and the Police. And unfortunately, I drank and played Frisbee through REM and missed the entire REM performance, but saw Joan Jett and the Police.
I think you were probably better off playing Frisbee, but that's just my personal opinion. I agree with the Go-Go's. I think they're trendsetters. They, you know, again, okay, this is in the direction of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, is there the discography that, you know, other Rock and Roll Hall of Fame bands have? No, they had two, three albums, but extremely influential. I mean, I'm sure if you ask any one of the ladies who were on, like, say, Lilith Fair, that the success of the Go-Go's made it possible and easier for them to be able to headline tours and have some success.
Yeah, someone like Sean Colvin, somebody like that probably.
Yeah, even though Sean Colvin's more like a bluegrass.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I mean,
but it's just, you know, so yeah, I agree. Okay.
Mike, it's your last one. You've got like 2.5 minutes. That's it.
Okay. I will go with my Canadian band that I believe are one of the best bands ever. But I don't know whether they had enough success internationally to be able to get in, and that's the Tragically Hip. The Tragically Hip are an incredible band. Gord Downie, rest in peace. He was one of the best songwriters. And they had a number of, I mean, they had 5-6 really great albums. The question is, you know, people outside of Canada and Buffalo and Cleveland. And here's in a thumbnail.
Sure.
Here's the influence or here's the area where Tragically Hip are successful. In Toronto, they're selling out 20,000 seat stadiums, Air Canada Center, Scotiabank Arena, in Vancouver and Calgaryville. And in Buffalo, they're selling out KeyBank Center. In Cleveland, they're playing the Hard Rock Cafe. So that's where they're a regional band, but anybody who knows music has to respect their songwriting and their lengthy list.
I saw them live once, and it was at the Grey Cup. I actually went and covered the Grey Cup in Ottawa, and they played at halftime. And they gave us an EP, which I still have. I forget how many songs are on it, but they were great. And I listened to every bit of it, and I was like, wow. I had never heard them live before.
Yeah.
Just for the reasons you said. So I concur with you. And that was a pretty big crowd. I don't know how many they fit at the old Ottawa place there, but you know, they loved it. It was probably one of the better, it's better than half the halftime shows we see for the Super Bowl. So
and talk about, and we'll end on this, talk about musical near misses. They were very popular in Buffalo. They were selling out arenas in Buffalo, but they were associated. They had some a friendly relationship with the alternative station in Buffalo, 103.
Is this the deep cut station, Mike?
No, that's not. No. Okay. No. 97 Rock is the adult rock. The Tragically Hip never got played on 97 Rock. 103 is more. You know, they were playing Metallica. They were playing Stone Temple Pilots, but they were also playing Tragically Hip. So anyway, the Hip had sold out big shows in Buffalo, and all of a sudden, one morning, waking up for work, I hear they're gonna play a bar. A small club, essentially 3 blocks away from my apartment.
Okay.
And they're going to give out tickets, but you have to go to the small club and line up. And this is like 7:30 in the morning. So they announce this. I throw on whatever clothes I have, run out, and there's already a line of like 40 people, of course. So probably, you know, I'm sure people, you know, told their brother and their brother. You know. So I get in line. They're going through giving away free tickets to this show. And I get to 2 people away and they say, sorry, tickets. So, I mean, I heard it exactly when it happened and I missed out by this much. And of course it was a fantastic show. Cause I know somebody who
worked
for this radio station. So, you know, my task in life is to always come 2 people short.
Before we end the show, the last thing I'll say is this deep cut station in Buffalo, here's a good example of what they would play. For Kansas, they would be like, and now here's Song for America. And it's like, you know, 14 minutes. And, you know, and that's what they play.
Well, that's a bathroom song. Honestly, those deep cut stations, it's like the DJ has to go and take a, you know what? So he plays Supper's Ready. He plays 21 minutes. He needs to, you know, read the newspaper and clean out his bowels. So, you know, that's
all right. We're gonna end the show there. I don't think we can go anywhere after that. That's it. Thanks for listening to Rockology. We'll see you.